Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
As world leaders gather at the UN Climate Conference, one idea gaining attention is carbon removal, or ways to take back some of the greenhouse gases that we've already put into the atmosphere. All this week, our climate series, Reverse Course, will dig into some of that technology, from companies pulling CO2 directly out of the air and putting it into concrete, to people plumbing the depths of the ocean for places to store humanity's excess carbon. Today, Here and Now's Chris Bentley reports that the planet already has its own pathways for cleaning up carbon dioxide, and there are people who want to plug into those natural systems to do the work for us.
It's a blast day at the Sunrock Quarry outside Durham, North Carolina, which means 50,000 tons of stone are about to get blown up. A rock face the size of an apartment building crumbles like gingerbread. And high fives are in order.
Don't leave me hanging.
Wow!
Mary Yap is saying wow, not only because she just saw 42,000 pounds of explosives go off, but because of what's lying in that pile of rubble, ready to be scooped up. Yap co-founded a company on it called Lithos Carbon.
Yeah, when we first came over and saw our first massive mountains of basalt dust, we knew that this could actually be a meaningful solution.
A solution to climate change that works like this. A chemical reaction happens as air, and especially rain, erodes the minerals in rock. And that reaction takes some of the carbon dioxide currently warming the climate out of the atmosphere. That process is called rock weathering, and it's part of the natural cycle of carbon that has worked for billions of years, long before humans messed things up.
It's really powerful. It removes about 1.1 billion tons of CO2 from the atmosphere every year. And the big question here when you're thinking about carbon removal and, you know, tackling climate change is, what are the big levers that you have to actually make an impact? Not like, you know, little bits here and there, like obviously we should all recycle, these kinds of things, but like, what are the big levers? And this is arguably one of the biggest levers that exists. Without this one process on Earth, the planet would look like Venus, with greenhouse gases everywhere. We actually would not exist.
Yap's company, Lithos, is trying to answer a deceptively simple question. How can we make that natural process happen faster? Answer, by grinding up rocks that do this naturally, like basalt, to increase their surface area for reaction. Simple enough, but first, Yap has to gather a lot of rock dust.
So I just called every single quarry that I found on Google Maps. You just pick up the phone and a lot of people say, "Lady, we don't sell dust. That's super weird."
That's how she ended up here. Quarries like this one sell rock for construction materials and asphalt. But Yap is after the leftovers, the dust that's currently just sitting in a big pile.
We affectionately call that pile Brown Mountain.
Alex Culpepper is with the Sunrock Group, which runs the quarry. After they blast the rock out of the walls, like we heard earlier, they wash it and wring out the water. That leaves a cakey residue that Culpepper says they've got no use for.
For the last 10 years, we've taken that product and just piled it up on site. We've made berms out of it, we've made Brown Mountain, and we're starting to run out of places to pile it up out here.
No wonder he's happy to sell a piece of Brown Mountain to a company like Lithos. And what does Lithos do with all that dust? They have to spread it out so it reacts with air. To do that, they give it to farmers like Russell Hedrick. He grows corn and soybeans in North Carolina and Georgia, and he used to spread agricultural lime, a common additive that raises soil pH and adds some nutrients. Now, he's spreading basalt to do the same thing. Hedrick is running his own experiment to find out how the new rock dust stacks up against ag lime, and he likes what he sees.
Look how green that these plants are on the right-hand side where we had basalts. And you can see on this side of the field, it's already starting to get way more yellow in it. To me, this right here, anytime we can keep our plants healthier longer, this just correlates into more money for us on the farm and a better product for, you know, consumers to have.
Those rows of green soybeans are vindication enough, he says. But there's another reason why Hedrick's happy to offer his farmland as a venue for Lithos's plan to capture carbon.
We're getting a premium for that carbon credit, so they're paying us $50 an acre, which is super awesome. I mean, there's carbon companies out there that are seeking farmers to use ag land for carbon capture. The problem is, by the time they chop up what they're taking out of it, the farmer doesn't make any money. And so a lot of farmers have been frustrated with that market and just haven't went into it like we did.
This isn't the only way Hedrick is trying to use his farm to store carbon. He sprays compost tea, plants cover crops, and says he spoon feeds micronutrients to his crops. That makes him part of a growing movement called regenerative farming, which aims to put more carbon back in the soil than it takes out.
Do I think that farmers could play a role in environmental stewardship and addressing some of our climate change issues? Absolutely.
There are almost 900 million acres of farmland in the U.S., and Hedrick says if each one stored just a single ton of carbon, it'd make a dent in the climate crisis.
I think it's kind of cool to be a part of that.
But there is at least one big problem with turning American farms into carbon sinks, says Ilsa Cantola.
The corn-soy system in the American Midwest loses carbon to the atmosphere overall.
Cantola is part of a team at the University of Illinois that's studying agriculture's role in the carbon cycle. She says there are plants that take more carbon out of the air than they put in, like native prairie grasses with root systems that can grow more than 15 feet deep, or miscanthus, a non-native relative of sugarcane that could be turned into fuel. At the research farm in Urbana, Illinois, reedy stalks of miscanthus sway under the sun, 12 feet tall and topped with a silvery tuft of flowers. They're pretty, but farmers don't plant crops because of how they look.
Encouraging a more heterogeneous landscape hasn't been going very well. You know, it's there isn't any money in miscanthus at the moment. You know, corn and soy is here and here to stay.
A few fields away, a combine rolls over neat rows of corn, harvesting the summer's crop and spitting a fountain of kernels into a towering steel bin. These fields are running a bigger, more rigorous version of the A-B test we saw on Russell Hedrick's farm, assessing the impact of basalt dust on carbon storage and plant growth. You don't need a PhD to see that the stuff is nutrient-rich. There's ragweed sprouting right out of the pile of rock dust sitting on the side of the field. Hedrick says he saw a 30% jump in yield when he started using basalt. Cantola says there's more research needed into the long-term impacts and whether that kind of yield boost might hold up. In the meantime, though, she says there's plenty of evidence that basalt is safe for crops.
The risk, of course, would be to the companies to start selling a lot of credit for basalt application and then not be able to follow through on the actual carbon capture numbers because we're early in this process.
Cantola recently published a scientific paper that found adding basalt to corn and soybean farms could offset up to 42% of carbon emissions from the plants and soil. Great news, but the process comes with its own carbon problem.
So the big one is the transportation emissions.
Right, because if you have a million farms using it, you might need a million trucks.
You might need a million trucks, and then we've just shot ourselves in the foot.
Evan DeLucia runs the lab overseeing a lot of this research at the University of Illinois. He co-authored that paper with Cantola, and he says spreading rock dust on crops to capture carbon seems to work. But companies like Lithos face a challenge scaling up. Their business model is selling carbon removal credits to companies including Alphabet, Shopify, and Meta. DeLucia says that means companies like Lithos are going to have to account for all of their emissions.
My opinion is that until we price carbon appropriately and start dealing with proper carbon markets, we're really going to be struggling with this challenge. That's going to help us. The minute we start monetizing this, we'll move forward quickly. But then the question becomes, how do you quantify it? Because now money's at stake, and so approximations are not working so well. We want to know what kind of cash am I paying to put this on my fields, and what kind of return on investment am I getting?
Yeah, can you prove it?
Can you prove it? We can model it, not good enough.
Back in North Carolina, Mary Yap takes off her hard hat and comes into the scale house, where trucks get weighed before they leave the quarry. Yap says Lithos has already captured 10,000 tons of carbon and they hope to 10x that in the next year. It's a long way from the 100 billion tons or more that scientists say we'll need by the end of the century. I ask Yap if she's worried about the logistics of scaling up. Yap, who comes from a farming family, says the most important part of their supply chain isn't the rock dust or the financial instruments, but the farmers.
All the farmers, they've got the spreader. They know how to do this. They've already been spreading other rock dust. They're growing this food and they're planning to do it for a long time. That seems like a pretty good supply chain to work with.
There's plenty of basalt around the world, but it's farmers who will ultimately decide if spreading rock dust on crops becomes a viable climate solution. For Here and Now, I'm Chris Bentley.